against Martinez-Lopez.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel.
Ms. Lyson.
Yeah, may it please the Court, my name is Marsha Lyson, and I represent Cristanto Martinez-Lopez. Today, Mr. Martinez-Lopez is asking that you reverse the district court's denial of the minor participant reduction under the U.S. Sentencing Guidelines, Section 3B1.2. To me, there's two issues in this case. I think the first issue is that there was some disagreement in the briefs about the standard of review in this case. And it's our contention that the standard of review is that the district court's factual determinations are entitled to the clear error standard, but that their interpretation of the guidelines is entitled to a de novo review. The second issue is that the district court in this case failed to conduct a proper analysis in denying Mr. Martinez-Lopez the minor participant reduction. Under the case law, and I think it was articulated well in U.S. v. Scroggins, this court said that the trial judge must take into account the broad context of the defendant's crime. And this comprehensive assessment must include a comparison of the acts of each participant in relation to the relevant conduct for which the participant is held accountable under U.S. Sentencing Guidelines 1B1.3.
Now, Ms. Lyson, it seems to me that there's certainly a lot of water under the bridge with respect to this minor participant adjustment. And it really seems to me that there are two theories out there, and one of them is the theory that the cases have pretty definitively adopted, and the other may be your theory. The guideline looks at somebody who's substantially less culpable, not just somebody who, after you do this grand balancing of culpability, assuming you can do that reasonably, is below another person, the lowest on three or more, or the lower of two. But we haven't gone that way. We've said it really has to be substantially less before the sentencing discount that you would get by having a two-level downward adjustment is called for. Otherwise, you'd have to do this in every single case, basically. It's rare that you're going to have a case where people are all exactly the same. And the Sentencing Commission, I think, signaled that this wasn't supposed to happen all the time, which is why the cases have gone as they have.
And that's correct, Your Honor. I do, however, believe that Mr. Martinez-Lopez is entitled to the correct analysis under the case law. And I think this court put it best in U.S. v. Almanza, which came down in 2000. And Judge Posner in that case said that rather than holding the scope of the conspiracy constant, the defendant's participation should be held constant, and the broader the scope, the more minor the participation. In this case, the judge seemed to only take into account.
The Sentencing Commission amended the guideline after that decision, and there were many others in this circuit that said the same thing, to reject that approach. Not clear why we should be following it after the commission rejected it.
Well, because I think that under the standard that someone needs to be less culpable in order to be entitled to the reduction, I think that implies that there needs to be an analysis of the relationship between the participants.
The question I'm asking is why you are asking us to follow an approach that the Sentencing Commission considered and rejected. There was a conflict among the circuits about whether that was the right approach.
Yeah,
the Sentencing Commission amended the guideline to use a different approach.
But the sentencing guidelines still include, though, the less culpable provision, and I still think that that needs to be taken into account. The participants need to be compared to each other. And in this case, there was virtually no mention by the district court of the conduct of the co-conspirator in this case, which was Lazaro Martinez Velasquez. It seemed that the district court only took into account Mr. Martinez-Lopez's actions in a vacuum. And all we're saying is that he's entitled to a proper analysis under the minor participant reduction.
And but there also has to be something objectively reasonable about calling someone a minor participant. And the district court here thought that Mr. Martinez-Lopez's conduct was actually a fairly important part of this. He was the one who was getting the drugs to people. There are no sales unless you get the drugs to them.
Yes, and I understand that. But I think, though, if you look at Mr. Martinez-Lopez's conduct alone, it might seem that he's not a minor participant, but compared to all of the relevant conduct that he was held responsible for at sentencing, I would say that he might still be entitled to a minor participant reduction. He was only convicted in a one-count indictment, and at sentencing he was held responsible for all of the drugs that were found in the apartment.
Right. Well, I mean, and that just follows from 1B1.3. I think it gets back to this idea that to be a minor participant, your participation really has to be very minor. It has to be very quite different and less than that of others, and the district court doesn't find that much of a difference in culpability.
But I think that Mr. Martinez-Lopez is entitled to some finding of less culpability or more culpability. I think there needs to be a comparison by the district court. I think there needs to be more mention of the co-conspirator's conduct in order to make that determination, and I think that's what's missing in this case, and that's why he is appealing that decision. So he is asking either that you reverse the district court's decision or that you would remand the case so that the district court can make the correct analysis under the sentencing guidelines. And I think this case is important because it goes to the very heart of why the sentencing guidelines allow for a minimal participant reduction or a minor participant reduction. It's because when people enter into conspiracies, they are subjected to a large amount of punishment, and I think the sentencing guidelines are allowing those people who are less culpable to have sentences that reflect that. And I think
I knew it was here someplace. I mean, the court, I think, does address the question whether he's minor. She says she doesn't think he's entitled. His constant and continuing involvement with the drugs, storing them, delivering them, taking care of them, everything that he did shows that he was a pretty active participant in this conspiracy and that he wasn't simply carrying out very, very minor tasks, such as just making a delivery or two. So unless you're really saying that we need district judges as a matter of law to write much better opinions on sentencing, which might make life a lot easier, actually, for us, but we haven't said that. Doesn't that signal that she thought about what she needs to think about?
Because there was no mention of the co-conspirator's actions, and there was no analysis of how Mr. Martinez-Lopez...
What difference would that make when this involves constant continuing involvement with the drugs, storing them, delivering them? That's a pretty important part in its own. Why do we need to know what the co-conspirator did?
Because Mr. Martinez-Lopez was only convicted of a small number of deliveries compared to all of the drugs that were found in the apartment, that would mean that his co-conspirator was delivering more drugs than he was. I think he's entitled to have the district court at least conduct some analysis of what the other co-conspirator was doing. And I think what the district court did was, I think it found that his actions couldn't be described as minimal. And, of course, that's true. He's not entitled to a minimal participant reduction because, of course, only people who are the least culpable and have virtually no
district
involvement.
Judges have to have some discretion. And this is a classic example of giving a district judge discretion in these situations. We're not going to sit up here and say, no, you should have really made that comparison and there were this many more drugs and this fewer drugs. Do you want us to make the sentencing decision?
No. I think, though, that there needs to be a requirement that the district court at least conduct the proper analysis. And I think that's what's lacking here. I don't think that this court should be determining sentences. I just think that this court needs to make sure the district courts are giving effect to the sentencing guidelines.
And I'd also... If you want to save rebuttal time, you might...
Yes, I'd like to reserve that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Rumbelow.
Good morning, Your Honor. Rita Rumbelow on behalf of the United States. There's absolutely nothing in this record that suggests that Judge Crabb committed clear error. As Judge Wood pointed out, it's a requirement for her to find that this defendant was a minor participant, very minor. He wasn't. This record is clear. There's an abundance of facts. He leased the apartment. It was the stash house. He didn't just lease it a month prior to this. In his truck, on the day of his arrest, they found the lease renewal. He had just renewed the lease. He is the one who decided to let his sister and brother-in-law also stay in the apartment. It wasn't his uncle. The record is clear that he is the one who paid the rent and he paid the utilities. Moreover, it was his fingerprints that were found on the heroin packaging. There's nothing in the record, and I pointed this out at sentencing. It's really only his word. He's like, well, I wasn't delivering the heroin. But the facts of this case just show he was delivering large amounts of cocaine. Large amounts. Yes, his uncle was the one who was in contact with the government's CI. It was the uncle who arranged for the deliveries. But he made these deliveries. Over a six-month period, he made a minimum of 8 deliveries to the government CI, possibly as many as 15. Who knows who was delivering the heroin? That's just really not part of the record. But what was part of the record is that his fingerprints were identified on that packaging. So Judge Crabb correctly found, based on all of these facts, that this defendant was an essential component of the conspiracy. And they argued extensively at sentencing about what the uncle's role was. Judge Crabb heard that. She acknowledged it. And as the court pointed out, she found that the defendant's conduct in this case was constant and continuing. I ask that if the court doesn't have any questions, that you affirm the sentence in this case.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Lyson?
Again, I would just say that I believe the district court's interpretation of the sentencing guidelines are entitled to de novo review and not just the clear error review. With respect to the stash house, I believe the state conceded at sentencing that Mr. Martinez Lopez did not live there full time. He did only live there part time, and at other times he was staying with his girlfriend. And I think it was also noted at sentencing that he paid half of the rent, and I believe his brother and sister-in-law were paying the other portion of the rent. And I think it's important here that the United States concedes that the uncle supplied the drugs and that he was arranging the deliveries. And I think that's important because there was no mention of that by the district court. And I think that's what's missing is just that comparison, that analysis that he's entitled to. It is important because it would make the difference between 7.5 years versus 9 years. And I think that given the gravity of the sentence, he's entitled to a correct analysis. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate
your
time.
Ms. Lyson, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been to your client and to the court. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.